Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Peter Maxwell Slattery Show. Today, our guest is Niara Easley. How are you going, Niara?
I'm doing good, thank you.
Thank you for being on the show. Mm-hmm. Now, you're an experiencer, you're an author. Your experiences cover a wide range from my lab to interactions with otherworldly beings, and you've also got recollection of past lives, which, you know, doesn't usually happen, but it sort of comes into the game once the experiences get to a certain point. Now, how did this all sort of unravel for you with sort of the transformation awakening process?
Well, one of the things that came into my mind recently was I read the book series Dune, all the Dune books, and by Frank Herbert. And in those books, they have these clones that in the book they would call them a Gola. And in order to make the Gola wake up to who they were previously, they would subject them to some kind of trauma. And it's really interesting because trauma, if you want to heal from it and you are really committed to healing from the trauma itself is like an activator or a catalyst to kind of force an awakening to higher consciousness. Because you can't do anything else with it other than evolve to try to deal with the trauma.
Exactly.
And the experience. Yes.
So how did this all play out for you? Like, I've read what you've sent me and also gone through, you know, your websites and that type of thing, and I was surprised with the military part of it, how there was sort of like that time of period in your life of missing time. How did you recognize that, and how far through it was when it sort of things were clicking that something just wasn't right?
Well, that was back in 1993. And I was—I had a friend, and we were talking about a lot of all kinds of different things, spirituality, consciousness, and I had mentioned that I'd been in the military, and he noticed that I wouldn't talk about it, and he thought that was strange, because he's thinking, wow, she's so open about everything else and chatty about everything else, but she kind of skates away from the military topic. And so he sat me down one day and said, tell me about your military time, I'm kind of interested in that. I said, sure. And I said, okay. I went to Lackland Air Force Base in Texas for boot camp, and then Biloxi, Mississippi for technical training school. Then I went home on vacation for about 6 weeks to cover Thanksgiving and Christmas. And then I was stationed at Nellis Air Force Base. That was my first duty station, and I worked at Tonopah Electronic Warfare Range. And when I said that Tonopah Electronic Warfare Range, I couldn't remember anything about working there. It was like, wow, I know I worked there for 3 or 4 months, but I don't remember anything about working there.
Could you remember what your position was?
Yes.
Like what your job was? Yeah.
My job was auto track radar specialist, and that's a surface air missile and anti-aircraft artillery radar, and it tracks with a little pencil beam so that it can, like, target, the aircraft. And what we were doing was training pilots to fly against radar. So I remember the job that I did, and I remember my skill set and things like that, but I couldn't tell you anything about where I worked, the radar site, the people I worked with. I couldn't really tell you anything. I had to work very hard trying to build memory chains back into that time period to remember anything at all. And memory, I've discovered in trying to work with my own memory, I've discovered that memory is very associative. So I went back and I thought about a friend that I knew at Biloxi for technical training school. And then I thought about a friend that I knew after I had left Tonopah. And I thought about those friends and tried to follow the chain of memory around those friends into that time period. And I remembered a few things, but nothing really important. I remember some off-duty times with those friends, and just a couple things. One of the friends had actually visited me out on the test site in Tonopah, and she kind of waved her hand at the desert and said, you know, there's a place out there called Dreamland, and I'd give anything to know what's there.
Yeah,
That was the only thing that I could remember where I was actually at the radar site. If I was able to remember her comment about Dreamland.
So how, like, later obviously more came to be revealed to you about what was going on out there.
Yeah.
How did that play? Like, what led up to that happening? The realization of what you went through.
Well, when I realized I had the missing memory, possibly 3 to 4 months worth, I had a wave of nausea come over my body, and I didn't actually get sick to my stomach, but I did feel sick.
Do you think that was because you were trying to remember that time?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
It was, and. So I, in 1994, I visited, I was a volunteer at the Whole Life Expo in Las Vegas, Nevada, and Bud Hopkins was a speaker there. I went to see his presentation, and he gave a good presentation, as he always did, and then at the end, I raised my hand, and I said, well, I have this strange thing that happened when I was a kid of being left alone under a street lamp, and then I have this other thing that I saw, like one of these shadow beings, and then I have 3 months of missing time from the military where I can't remember 3 months of my life. And he said, talk to me afterwards, and so I did, and he asked if I wanted to do hypnosis that night, and we did, and then a chunk of this traumatic recall came out, and life has never been the same since.
Yeah, now once, you know, some parts are revealed, it goes on and it's a chain link, it just, other, you know, like a spider web, it all connects up. So, did you end up getting more than one hypnosis session ever done, or was that sort of the one you got done and sort of everything sort of activated and woke up from there?
Well, that one kind of left me reeling from shock, you know, and suddenly I'm like, oh, what the heck is this? Little gray guys with big eyes, I was ready for. You know, I kind of suspected that I was having abductions, but I had never heard of military abductions at that time. I was completely unprepared for that kind of material to surface, and it really frightened me badly. And then I had to try to find out, am I crazy or is this for real? It sure feels real because hypnosis is like a you're there experience.
I know. Yeah, it's like it's visual. Everything's like as real as you're going through it at the time.
So I started, you know, hunting down as many people as I could to talk to try to find out what the heck happened, and started researching and trying to figure out how does this happen and in what political and social context can this even happen in the United States of America?
Exactly. You know? So it would have, like, it's a lot to process. I know that for myself once you go through that. A lot of my interactions and experiences have been total recall. It's just a minute amount of missing time, although I think there's a lot more going on all the time than we realise, especially in our sleep. But it was a lot for me to process. What was revealed from that hypnosis session and from the chasing up leads or whatever you went through to sort of find out, you know, what the hell went on? Because, you know, something was revealed. So what was revealed to you after you sort of connected the dots?
The experiences themselves, you know, was kind of standing out on the deck of the radar van, and I was looking in the sky, and there were saucers just kind of floating up there, and I focused on the one closest because it was like, wow, I can't believe what I'm seeing out here. And this is really cool, and I'd be really excited to see it if I wasn't so terrified that I'm seeing it, because I don't feel like I have the right security classification to be seeing what I'm seeing. So I was really scared. And then they took us and put us on a bus and took us to what I think was either Area 51 or an underground facility that's actually at the Tonopah part of the facility. And I was put through some things that were, you know, basically unbelievably cruel. And that's the thing that was the hardest thing for me to wrap my head around, because I'm a really kind person. I mean, to be unkind for me is like a cardinal sin, you know? And I mean, I'm human. Sometimes I get mad like everybody else and, you know, have moments, but this was just unbelievably cruel stuff. I was injected with some kind of experimental chemical, and then I was thrown in a little booth, taken down some stairs, You know, it's all in the book right now. And I've, you know, said these words on many interviews. So, taken down these stairs, and I was pushed in this little room or this little booth with a one-way glass where I guess people were watching me go through the effects of the injection. And then when it started to wear off or dissipate, then I was dragged out of that room, and I was sexually assaulted by the two security guards that drug me down there. And the whole idea that you would inject somebody like that, and then they're already traumatized from the injection, and then to be sexually assaulted on top of that was just extreme trauma.
Yeah, it's disgraceful. Do you know what the purpose of that injection was, or do you have any sort of, you might not know exactly, but you have an idea?
Well, I just have one little thought that occurred to me, and I haven't really been able to push that thought away, so yeah. I'll just put it out there. I'm just thinking that maybe our government has known about this ascension process.
Yes, yeah.
For a long time, and they're thinking, well, how can we get in on that? You know, we don't want to do all the spiritual development. You know, we just want to get there and see what's going on because we want to make sure that we're in control of everything that's going on. So I wondered, because of the way the injection made me feel, it made me feel like I was coming apart. Like my body was turning into soda pop fizz.
All right. Yep.
And because of that, I was wondering if maybe they were experimenting with injections that might create a dimensional shift without someone having to do the spiritual work.
Yes. With my experiences, it was revealed that they were monitoring my DNA for the shift to see where I was at, and that I know it was more complicated than that, but that's how it was put to me, to, I guess, simplify, you know, while you're in a human body, the body computer, to sort of process that. The other thing was that they were trying to mislead me about my experiences, and the third thing was that either they were downloading or uploading something, because I had some, I could talk to you about this off air, but there was some weird stuff that occurred this year where that was revealed to me that was what was going on, but the technology that was used was, to me, seemed too unfuturistic. It had to have, I know that this was either a screen memory or something, but it was a cover for what they were actually doing, because, you know, well, they're working with some ET, so they got ET technology, so they're a lot further ahead in some aspects. The types of, like, did you see any types of beings, what from this remembrance of working at the base, So what types of beings or interactions or their place in the whole sort of situation that's going on did they play?
Well, I did see a gray or a zeta reticulan looking ET,
yeah,
who was present when I was being assaulted. And he was watching that, and it was almost like I could hear him in my mind thinking, I can't believe that, or he was having some kind of issue with the fact that these people were treating another one of their own kind so horribly and with so much distress for the person. And it was kind of like he just didn't understand why human beings would treat each other that way. But it could have been the J-Rod that Bill Uhouse talked about being the... Or one of them, that he talked about being there as a consultant for the technology.
That's amazing. Was there any other types of beings that you saw, or was it just the gray type that you saw at that base?
I did see reptilian beings on a couple different occasions that I remember in hypnosis. I didn't have any direct interaction with them that I know of. I'd probably have to have more hypnosis to dig up a little more. And it took me a long time to process the first hypnosis with Bud Hopkins to even open up to having more hypnosis. And it was many years later that I finally did have, you know, so 1994 to 2002 or 2003. And then finally I found somebody I trusted enough to go under again and get more answers.
Yeah, now it's just fascinating you've brought up the Zetas and the Reptilians, because that was shown to me how they had been working literally projections from some of these beings of that type of thing. I've had interactions with Reptilians. I've had interactions with many different types of greys. Mm-hmm. One thing, like this might be a bit further down the track in our conversation, in the interview, but has it been revealed to you that some of the greys I know of two, and two of these Nordic type beings are actually us coming back from the future.
Yeah, I used to not really believe that, but I've come around to really thinking that there's a lot of credibility to that idea.
That's been introduced into, my experience. I just ask that every now and then, and it's usually they've sort of given a similar answer to what you just gave. So that's just something, that this played on my mind. With the disc that you saw when you were going back to the hypnosis, was it daytime or nighttime you saw that? And do you have a feeling if they were military or if they were extraterrestrial, interdimensional craft, like, it was theirs, or, if it was ours?
Well, at first I thought they must be ET craft, but after doing all the research that I've done, I think that at least some of the craft were ET and some of them were back-engineered Terran flying saucers.
Yeah, so in the memory, was it daytime or nighttime when you saw them?
Like nighttime.
Nighttime, yeah.
Middle of the night, yeah.
So were they just emanating one light, or was there multiple lights coming off the crafts?
Well, like I said, I focused on the one that was nearest to me.
Yep.
And I would say, maybe it was 100, 150 yards away, up hanging up in the
Pretty
sky.
Pretty close, yeah.
Pretty close. I could see a lot of detail. Not that there was a lot of detail on it. It was very smooth. It didn't have sharp saucer edges. It was they were rounded saucer edges. And I'm kind of guessing now that... that maybe that's because of the way the field technology they use to fly, so that they don't get static discharge. You don't want anything that's going to make a lightning bolt.
Yeah, you need it so it's just smooth, so it's sort of contained in that area, definitely. So after the hypnosis session, and you've done a bit of, lead tracking on the situation, where did things go from there?
Mm-hmm. After seeing the craft?
After the, doing the hypnosis with Bud Hopkins, and you've, sort of processed that information, like, where did things, go from there and lead up to where they are today?
Well, first off, the first chase I did was, trying to chase down information, people to talk to, just trying to figure out what happened. And why, and that was like kind of crazy making, because the ETs and the government aren't being very forthcoming, and all there are is a bunch of experiencers and researchers running around trying to put their pieces together and make a meaningful whole. So I did this for a while, and was feeling pretty driven, and then finally I just thought, how am I ever going to get any answers? The people that really have the information are not sharing it. And I just thought, okay, I want my life to go back to being about meditation, healthy food, and spirituality. And so I thought, okay, this is it. I'm out of this. And this is no reflection on the individual at all, but I did meet an individual that had a sex change operation so the aliens would stop coming and taking his sperm.
Mm-hmm.
So he actually had himself changed into a woman. And that was probably the straw that broke the camel's back for me, because I just thought, am I going to be like one of these people that's just so obsessed and lose all perspective and all balance in my life? And I just thought, I can't do that. I gotta go back to what means something to me. So I did. I tried to just forget about it, sweep it under the rug, and I tried to pick up and go on with normal life. But it's like trying to go on with a normal life with a gorilla hanging off your back.
Well, you can't really... you can get on with things the best that you can, but mm-hmm. I went through that process with my family. All that have seen, they've actually seen something now, which is great for me, but... and it's opened them up a lot more, and they've changed in some ways, but it was like they want you to live a normal life, and I don't have a partner or kids. I've got hybrid kids, but nothing, I'm just not normal like everyone you'd think in society. But like I said to him, is that I'd be doing myself and everyone an injustice if I didn't do what I've done, because once you awake, you can't go back. And it's an everyday thing. Even though it might be minor thoughts come through or interactions come through, something will lead on to another. You just can't go back, and unless you've gone through it, Like, I was sexually abused as a kid too, and I've never used that as an excuse in anything, but I've seen how it's opened me up in other ways.
Right.
But it's just once, you know, you're awake and you can't go back. And it's really hard for those who aren't going through what we're going through to fathom that at all. It's just, and they blow it off, but that's, you know, they're blowing off the main reason, or the only reason why this is, you know, why we're going the way we go. So, yeah, I think you just got to get on with the best that you can, and it's easier said than done, but it's sort of, you know, trying to fit in society, but still trying to do and go through what you're going through at the same time. It's just, it's a bloody hard thing, so.
It's really hard.
Yeah.
Really hard.
So, you do healing as well, don't you? Like, that's, and meditation and all that type of thing. So, were you doing that before, like, or during your military career? Were you into all that type of thing?
Yeah, I've been into that my whole life.
Yeah.
Kind of born that way. I definitely identify with being a starseed or a wanderer.
Yeah.
ET soul that took on a human lifetime. And this is, and believe me, I know people are probably going to think I'm loopy for saying this, but as I have peeled and peeled away the layers and dug and looked in my own psyche, what I'm left with is that I took on this lifetime to have those experiences and then report back to my people what it's like for an individual human under very challenging circumstances to be on this planet.
Yes, definitely.
And that gives them information about what it is to be like an individual, because when I'm with them, it's very different. We're one.
Yeah,
I mean, we're individuals, but we're all connected. And the conversation that you and I are having right now, we could probably have it in a few seconds.
Definitely.
Because the telepathic or the telempathic transmission just going back and forth, and suddenly, you know, you've had a two-hour conversation in the space of maybe 10 seconds. And that's kind of how it goes there.
Well, it's a lot to process for myself, not what you've just said, but it was in the beginning, because like, I was wondering, why did I know, like, I've got a lot of videos of crafts and paranormal activity in the house, a lot of witnesses, but it was, why did I know when to go outside? I wasn't, and even now, people go, you must be outside all the time, and it's like, even the other night, a lady was here, and I walked straight out the back, and there were 7 crafts in about 5 minutes, and she was just blown away, and I said, I don't sit out here all night, I just know when to go outside. But that was, in the beginning, I was wondering, why did I know that, and why me? And then, it does, mostly that I found out talking to others, it does lead to the starseed connection that you've signed a contract to come here. Earth is meant to be the most, and being human on this earth is meant to be one of the most hardest darn things you can do out there, because of what, you know, the individuality aspect of being human, how hard things are here. But it's the experience, and yeah, there's the reporting back, there's going to the council and getting you know, reporting, and then going in between lives and what you're going to do next, and you have your break period. So that for me was, you know, so I've reincarnated down here to do this, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, yeah, of course, like what you were saying before, it's a darn lot to process. But with that, and which we'll get into now, which happened for you, was it activates and more comes into line with past lives.
Right.
You've gone into that a bit. And I was fascinated. I've had little bits of similarities with yours, you know, as you know, everyone's had different past lives. It's leave the God source and you come out, you know, we all gain knowledge and have experiences, which is what it's about. So would you like to go into your how these past lives were revealed to you and what they were pertaining to?
Well, the past lives started to surface in my early 20s, maybe even my late teenage years. And the first memory that came from the past life was being on a beach, and there was like this high cliff, and there was these tall, thin cypress trees lining the top of the cliff. And I was down there on the beach, and I was down there because I knew a tidal wave was coming, and I just wanted to allow it to take me away rather than be in the city trying to run away from people. The city was Atlantis, and I was a very psychic person. I still had my Lyran in that incarnation. I still had my Lyran abilities of precognition and psychic abilities were very strong.
So was that your last life before Atlantis was Lyran?
Yes, it was Lyran.
And then it continued on to Atlantis.
Yeah. It's kind of like this, you know, we came to Earth and we helped humanity become the species it is today. And and then some of us thought, wow, you know, this is really cool. And so some of us dropped our Lyran bodies, which were, for all practical intents and purposes, fairly immortal. And we chose to incarnate in some of the human forms that we had worked with creating here. And then when we did that, that was when this shift in consciousness began to happen, where, you know, we remembered what happened on Lyra, you know, with the reptilian incursion there. And we were concerned, now that we were people of Earth, we were concerned about it happening on Earth. And some of the people in Lemuria wanted to start building technology so that we could fight them off if they came back. And that was against our whole Lyran principles.
Well, something that got me that you said was that it's like as if having that weaponry opened up the reality for that to happen. And I've thought about that myself. I know that at the moment we've had a sort of a war, but not a war. I see not things as good or bad, but in service mode or self-service mode. But there's been interactions where I know that there's been groups of, for all intents and purposes, not the best terminology, but good guys have been sort of blocking the reptilians out at the moment, although some have got through, and they're still, I know they're here because I've had interactions with them, but I was fascinated with that spin that you put on it, because I've thought that myself, that having that weaponry or even that thought can create the possibility of that reality to, you know, project itself and manifest.
Yeah, I think so too. And it's something I'm kind of thinking, you know, right now. I mean, there's this big thing going on in the United States with trying to take away our right to bear arms.
And well, that's happened here totally. Like, years ago, we lost, you know, the... There's always been a restraint on guns, but it usually happened after Port Arthur, the incident that we had down in Tasmania. But we look at America and it's like, yeah, that's what's... Like, you guys go big on your First Amendment and all that sort of thing. Here, it's, you know, it's bloody limited in all that. There's a lot of control here, and I know what you're going... You're saying with that type of thing, because, yeah, we see it here.
Yeah, the big question is up for me. While I still can buy a gun, should I? Because, you know, at this particular point in American history, I think giving up our guns is a very, very, very bad idea with the kind of government we have going on here. And yet, I ask myself, would I take that gun and would I use it on someone? I don't think I could, not even if they deserved it, because I'm just not a violent person. You know, I do have this one streak in me that my experiences brought out, where I describe myself as 90% warm, fuzzy, loving, spiritual person, and then there's 10% that's a frosty warrior that's not going to allow anybody to get hurt, including me.
I think that's common with all star seeds. I think we're loving, beautiful, buzzing, energetic life about us. But if you sort of pee yourself in the wrong way, we can snap too. And that's the human mind. Every time that happens to us, all I say is that's the human part of us. And if we had the DNA turned on, the junk DNA turned on, and we had the oneness, that just wouldn't come into reality. So from the Atlantean times, when the weaponry was started to be created, what happened from then on for the race, like the humanity at that time?
Well, there was kind of a schism where the people that wanted to build weapons, they went ahead and they left Lemuria and they went to Atlantis and they built the Atlantean civilization, and then they did all the things that they wanted to do. But by going down that path, it brought more difficulty to the Earth. Because, again, I think when you build weapons, you are creating a situation where you will need to use them. And the whole energetic thing of the law of attraction is about like attracts like. So when you're vibrating in a particular mode, then you're going to attract other things that are in sympathy with that vibration.
They resonate with it, yeah.
Yes. And so I think that that's how things kind of went wrong. And, you know, I talk to people all the time and say, well, what if the aliens come and they're bad? And I try to tell them, you know, you don't really have to worry about bad aliens coming. because the kinds of problems that we're having on our planet right now are from so-called, you know, more negative or regressive ETs that have been here and have created a lot of the problems we're coping with right now.
Well, I think with the negative, you know, mm-hmm. aspect of it, I think they need us, and that's why we're not, you know, we would have been wiped out a long time ago. And like one of my interactions with one of the races of reptilians were Earth-based, and they said we want ascension too, we're trying to break off because we can't evolve. And mm-hmm. in saying that, it's like as if they've put themselves in a box by putting us in a box by limiting us, so there's really no need to worry, except, you know, it's trying to break out of that box. I don't think, you know, mm-hmm. we have to worry about them coming here and blowing, you know, like Independence Day scenario or something like that.
Right.
So, yeah, very well. Mm-hmm. Did the reptilians, like you were saying, that the people of Earth at that time were worried about a reptilian invasion or something like that? Did that ever play out? Well, it has really, but not how, like, yeah, but most people think, but it did happen at that time.
It kind of did, you know, it kind of did play out back then, and, you know, they were repelled. And but then they kind of came in a more subversive way. And the thing that's been really that I would like people to understand, because I've never seen anybody else put this out into the public record in quite this way. There's a lot of love and light people that are very into the law of attraction and want to manifest their perfect lives, their perfect health, their perfect love, and so on and so forth. But I started looking at the law of attraction in a different way. I looked at it from a collective human standpoint, and I thought, geez, you know what? With all the indoctrination we get from the moment we're born, are you a little girl or a little boy? Okay, you start getting the girl programming or the boy programming. Then you go to school and you start getting the formula.
So-called education programming,
Yeah, education programming. And then there's religion, and then there's politics, and then there's nationalism and patriotism. There's so many programs of indoctrination to get us to follow a particular path in life. And when you're a starseed, you understand everything is vibration, energy, and frequency. Okay? So with all this indoctrination, it isn't just the last 50 years or 100 years. This is like for millennia. And it's just gotten more sophisticated as the technology has progressed. And so now we have all this indoctrination, and then we have the media machine, television, newspaper, some stuff that's on the internet, and it keeps feeding our minds, and we make the world with our thoughts. It keeps feeding our minds a version of reality that keeps these elite people on top and keeps us subject to them. And so I spent a lot of time in my book educating people about this process. It's not a very pleasant chapter to read, and I'm sorry for that, but there's no way to call a spade and sugarcoat it.
Yeah.
I did my best. You know, I tried to try not to make it too scary, but the only way for a fish to wake up that it's swimming in water is to reveal the water to them.
Exactly, and I've gone into that in... especially my last book, Operation Starseed, because that's the, you know, there was a chapter I sort of honed in on what you could call the Illuminati and then the entities or types of beings that are behind them and how everything's constructed, basically putting humanity in a box, your brainwashed with education that they think you should be privy to, and they've got, you know, they've got access to that knowledge, the real knowledge, and... A lot of people say love and light and everything's love and light. And I don't think you can know love and light and experience real love and light unless you've experienced the negativity, because there are people out there that say there's nothing negative out there. And I was one of those originally that thought exactly that. But with the interactions and what I worked out, and I've said to others that have had negative experiences, is that if you're having negative experiences, you're usually on the right path, because something's trying to block you from awakening more. It's trying to scare you. So you've got to know or experience both aspects of that to really know what love and light is, because just thinking everything's love and light, you don't project from there any further.
Exactly, that's exactly right. And I've been involved with spiritual practices, you know, for much of my life. And I read Paramahansa Yogananda's book in my early 20s, Autobiography of a Yogi. And I think in there or somewhere, I ran into the story of Milarepa, a Tibetan saint. And he was a master black magician. in his lifetime. Very intensely negative individual who suddenly had an awakening and thought, wow, I have to change all this. And so he had to go through a lot of hard experiences to burn off the karma that he had from being a black magician. But he went ahead and went through those experiences and faced all of his own inner demons. And in doing that, then he was able to become enlightened. And this story is told by gurus to show that no matter where you're coming from, if you really want to achieve enlightenment, you can do it. Even if you've been an intensely negative individual and you want to change, you can do it. And that's the thing, is every spiritual path I've ever looked at that's really worth anything valuable, it requires you to face your own inner demons and your own inner shadow. And so one of the things we talk about with the military-industrial complex is the compartmentalization.
Yes.
The need to know basis. And so I'm thinking, you know, there's compartmentalization where, you know, a lot of society doesn't know this is going on, and, you know, secrets and things like that. And then I thought about our own consciousness. You know, as Freud laid it out, we have a subconscious mind where we don't know what's in there. And we have a higher self when we don't know what's in there most of the time either. We just operate in this conscious mind area. So we ourselves are compartmentalized. And I thought to myself, what if the compartmentalization in government and military is a reflection of collective humanity's compartmentalization of collective consciousness? And the more I thought about it, the more that made sense to me. And so I wrote the book to try to illustrate that principle and also give enough foundation in quantum mechanics and in this way of looking at things so that people know it's not just some airy-fairy idea. There's some real data to support this.
Yes, well, the consciousness aspect is sort of where it all leads to all the experiences, because once you get there, you work out that the body is actually a computer and the brain as well. So you got the body computer, and trying to break the limitation of accessing this, the super consciousness or the higher consciousness aspect of ourselves, because a lot's filtered. I think now they say that we can only see 0.005% of what's really in front of us, because it's filtered through the eyes, and it's only the colour spectrum, which is only a minute part of the electromagnetic spectrum. So that's scientific fact. So that's what I usually start out my talks with, because it's saying what's there that we ain't seeing. But then we do see more than what the average people see. And it's the same with the hearing. We can only hear a certain frequency, but there's animals and that can pick up more, and it goes out a lot wider. Just before we go far ahead, what happened with Atlantis after... Was it Lemuria, then they went to Atlantis, created this type of technology. How did the downfall, you know, happen for that time? And what happened from there with weaponry?
Well, when I went to Atlantis with the other people, I didn't really go because I believed in what they were doing. I went because I felt like some of us original Lyrans had to go and keep an eye on this new version of the human experiment. And so I was there. I lived, you know, a few lifetimes there. And so my memory, you know, back in my early 20s was that one of waiting for the tidal wave to come and take me away. And I met another person down there, and he was someone special to me. And so we just kind of held each other, and then we watched the wave come and take us away. And there was like a moment of intense pressure, like, you know, suddenly you start to feel your body being crushed by the water, and then suddenly I was out of my body and in this place of pure light. And it was not a rough transition really at all.
Yeah.
It was very quick, and it was very beautiful. And then Atlantis was no more, you know, it was under the sea at that point. And then I have had, you know, periodic incarnations on Earth down through time, because I'm very invested in what happens here.
Yep.
I helped this human experiment to be birthed, and I'm very interested in how it's going to turn out, and I really care with all my heart about how it turns out and that it turns out well. And I try to tell people that I really believe, for many specific reasons, that most ETs out in the universe that have the ability to travel faster than light or fold space, I feel like most of them, 75 to 80%, are probably benevolent and spiritually evolved because of the technology that they have to use to traverse those far parsecs of space. You have to have a mastery of the science of quantum mechanics and string theory and
to be able to obtain the technology to have.
And if you have a mastery of an understanding of that, a deep understanding of that kind of technology, then you also have to realize that everything in the universe is interconnected and everything is sacred and has a right to exist and evolve free from interference as possible. And then there's the 25 to 20% of maybe backward, more regressive, more violent races that are more restrictive. And I think that what happens with them is they get their hands on the technology without really going through the disciplinary process to arrive at understanding it fully, and they just want to use the technology and weaponize it without really understanding what it's based in. And I think the United States of America is a great case in point for that.
Yes, definitely. I think the rest of the world is too, yeah.
Got our hands on this technology and develop it and weaponize it, and it'll make us really powerful and we can do all this stuff. But they didn't develop it from scratch so that they understand the spiritual implications of what they're using.
And I think that would have happened if they weren't back engineering, if they were creating this and coming across this, as themselves or, as a society, that you go through that transition of creating things, with it will come other things like the spirituality aspect of it. It's fascinating too, because there's a lot of, one of the main points of the crafts is there's a lot of people working on back engineering. I'm talking to a couple of these people and they know their stuff, the actual engineers in the American industrial complex. And like I was saying to them, I said, there's so many people, we already know how the crafts are made. But I said, look, if you're going to reverse engineer the propulsion system, what are you going to do? Because you've got the conscious aspect where there's a symbiotic relationship between what the craft is made out of and the craft itself, the propulsion system, and the pilots or whoever's in the crafts. Then you have to know how to jump from point A to point B. So you might have the propulsion system, but what's the interdimensional aspect to activate to go from point A to point B? So all you're going to have is something floating there. And this is where I said, you can do it. And I said, I believe you can do it. But in my opinion, I'd have more people on board trying to cover everything. But at the same time, that many people have created this same technology and they've been popped off. So, but I've talked about this on the show before. I've been in crafts where the actual crafts are created by consciousness. So this is really high evolved, enlightened beings at I wouldn't know what level. But when I've got to that side of things, that's where it makes the type of crafts that I was just speaking about a lot less evolved, even though it's way more above us, because this is something created by thought.
When I was on Lyra, I was, maybe a toddler when I got my first craft. And I got in it, and it was so easy to operate. It was like operating my own body. If I wanted to move someplace, just like moving my arm, all I had to do was think. The arm moves, So it was with the craft. It was like, well, I think I'd like to fly over the ocean, And immediately the craft is taking that information and translating it and making me fly over the ocean. So here I am, this small child that can fly anywhere on Lyra in the craft, because it's tuned to me, and do it in complete safety, even though I'm a toddler. And then it's also responds to the thoughts of my parents. So if my parents send a thought to the craft, they wanted me to come home, the craft
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's cool as. Just a question too.
I couldn't override that.
Yeah, that was just, come home, bang, it's done. No say in that. Their consciousness is taken over. Do you know about, or what's your take on the Lyran and Pleiadian connection?
Well, to my understanding, there is a Lyran colony, Lyran Pleiadian colony in the Pleiades star cluster, and it's like a colony that when we had to leave Lyra because of the reptilian incursion, some of us came here to Earth, to Lemuria, and started doing some of the work that we had planned on doing here. And then others of us went to the Pleiades and set up a colony there. And so again, it's kind of like a home away from home
it's
for
very
me.
Yeah, that's similar to my understanding, because I've got past lives of being in the Pleiades, which to me is sort of weird, because it's like as if I believe those lives are in the future, but yet time doesn't exist. But
it's an illusion.
So no, that was just interesting, your take on that. So do you know about if there's other races that have also joined the Lyrians that went to the Pleiades? There was other races from out in the cosmos that went there and united with the Lyrians there. So there's different sort of races in like the Pleiades, of different humanoid type.
Yeah, I think there's different ones. You know, different races went out and they kind of evolved in their own different ways. And some of them, you know, like I guess the Hathors, they're kind of cat-like.
Yep.
From what I understand. And so they may have, you know, used a different template for designing, you know, their forms.
Yeah, I've interacted with Syrians like that.
Yes. And so, you know, there's all different types, but, you know, I think we all share at least one or two common elements in our genome for us to have a humanoid form, you know,
yes.
Two arms, two legs, a head, torso, and things like that. So I think that there's a common element, and I tell people, if you want to see an ET, let's look in the mirror.
Yeah.
We are all not originating from here. And if you think that we are, you're listening to a history that has been contrived to make you think that you're a limited person walking around, you know, that's frail and that's when you die, you just rot and, you know, that's it, you know.
Exactly. But even with the, like, the ancient alien aspect and that too, I had Stephen Strong on the other day. I don't know if you've heard of him, but he's... Him and many others have gone into research that the Aboriginals have set sail from Australia 50,000 years ago, which defies everything that Egyptian hieroglyphs have been found in. Egyptians actually came here to get the Aboriginal knowledge, and even evidence of Aboriginals having the junk DNA being Pleiadian, which, you know, this sort of goes, like, people think the ancient alien stuff is out there. Well, this just takes it to a whole new level and goes into, you know, a lot more like you're talking about, which I think we shouldn't look so much back in the past, but I think it should be a bit of looking in the past and a bit of looking into the future, because they all exist at the same time. We're actually living all those lives at the same time. I actually said that, people. It probably trips you out, but you agree with that we're living all this? Yeah.
We're living all of it simultaneously, and it's really a hard time when we're trying to live in a linear manner to wrap our head around the fact that that everything is happening all at once. But Richard Bach said it really good in Illusions, The Adventures of a Reluctant Messiah. He said that when you hold a movie reel in your hands, that the entire movie is there from beginning to end, all in the same second that you're holding it in your hands, but it requires time and space to be experienced.
Yes, yeah. Nah, definitely. Sure. No, I can agree with that. It's just, you know, there'll be people probably watching this going, what? And it's like, at that point, I can't even explain further, because if they can't... Usually I'll start off with the God source that we left that, and we went through... We leave that to experience life and gain knowledge in every single form. So we go through, you know, the reincarnation process, but straight away I'll lose people too, and you've sort of got to level out where they're at. But this is the reality of it, that all things are at the same time, and that's where it's a beautiful thing, like I say to people. Isn't it great to know there's no heaven or hell? There's just life. There's just being, which is fascinating.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So after the military, being in the military, coming out, have you always had interactions? Like, obviously, before the military, you had these remembrances of the past lives.
Yes.
Were you having interactions on a level that you could remember then, or was it after the MyLab type stuff where you connected again with this spiritual part of yourself and the experiences took on a different form, which may have been there the whole time?
Well, I had the experiences in childhood, like the one of being left alone under a street lamp, where I had an abduction during that experience. And I didn't think about it too much. Every so often something would happen in childhood that would make me think, wow, what on earth is going on? Like waking up with a pain behind my right ear, and then reaching back there and feeling this big bump that is still there. And I went, and it was very strange, because when I first felt it and felt the pain, I thought, man, do I have cancer? Is there a cancer growing back here? And am I going to die? And that's like pretty intense for a 9-year-old to have thoughts of death. But then somehow it's like something shifted for me, and suddenly I didn't think about it that way anymore, and I didn't even remember the pain or waking up with this new bump. I just thought it was like a screen memory or something to kind of cover up the
fear.
Well, see,
the wiped or, yeah, a screen memory is implanted. Yeah.
And it's like I went from being intensely afraid, was I going to die or be sick or something, to, oh, I've always had this bump. It's part of the natural bone on my head, you know? And then it was when I went to see Fire in the Sky, and there was the scene when they were at the bar or the cafe, and somehow, I don't even know if it's even really in the film, but I saw on the film the face of an owl flash in front of my eyes. And then the real memory of how this bump got there with the pain and everything came rushing back. And I'm like sitting in a theater seat trying to get my breath because this memory was so powerful coming back of how it really happened.
Have you talked to Mike Cleland at all?
Yes.
He talked to me about my... I just spun out then when you said the owl because it's coming up. Since we've been talking about it, it's come up that many times. I've had weird owl experiences. I don't know if that's in the movie either. I've talked to other people, like Ellis Taylor has seen stuff in movies and then it hasn't been there later on.
Well, I've got to watch the movie again now and see if it's really in there or not.
Well, even if it's not in there, you could put that down to the high strangeness factor with what we go through, because just anything and everything can happen.
I know. Yeah, it's just... I don't know, it's just amazing, so.
So, just backtracking a little bit, is there a history in your family with a military connection, like even before yourself with your parents and going back?
Well, my dad was in the military. He served in the Philippines in the Army in World War II, and then both my maternal and paternal grandfathers were both in the military. My maternal grandfather, he rode with Teddy Roosevelt and the Rough Riders in the Dakotas.
Yep.
And that was part of his military service. And then my grandfather on my dad's side, he served in the Army in World War One. So
there is a connection.
There is definitely military connection in my family.
Have you talked about your experiences with your family at all? And if so, how have they been open-minded to it, or just blow it off, or?
Well, at first it was pretty hard for them to wrap their heads around that kind of extreme experience. But they accept me, they still love me,
yeah.
So.
That's great,
I guess,
that's beautiful.
You know, everything is okay. But, you know, it's a little tough for me because, I mean, I love them and they're my family, but now I remember so much now, and I'm remembering more all the time, that it's almost like I feel like, it's almost like they're a surrogate family, and then my real family are...
Yeah, I've got the same. I used to tell my mum she wasn't me mum, and I love her to death, and I'll do anything for her, but... I still say, you know, you're not my mum, but, you know, I love her to death. Exactly the same situation with me pertaining to that. So you've had the experiences as a kid, like the under the lamp incident, the thing behind your ear.
Mm-hmm.
You've got recollection of past lives, and then you go to the military and you nail some leads down when you get out. How do the actual interactions go from there? Like, how do they play out for you and continue today?
So like from the military to today?
Yeah, like not just with the military, but have you had interactions with otherworldly beings, like as in being taken out, like abductions, or whether it's fully conscious, you know, visitations or anything like that after the MyLab and the time in the military?
Well, I would love to have more conscious interaction, but they're still kind of holding back from that. I feel like at least once a week, I visit in my astral body. I go out and I visit the Laren ship.
Yep.
You know, and I get to be with my people. And I've asked, you know, because I have kind of a telepathic connection with my spirit guides, my interdimensional teachers, and I've asked them, why can't I remember more about being on the ship? You know, I come back and I wake up and I remember very little. You know, I remember important things, but I'd like to remember more. And they said, well, you'll remember it when it's necessary for you to remember it. And I said, well, that's cool, but I'd really like to remember more. And they said, if you remember more, it's going to be even harder for you to be on Earth.
Yes, well, that's how it's played out for me, that it is bloody hard. But even with conscious, like just talking to you now is how I've talked to some of them, but in my head, there's information or things revealed that, as you know, we already know all that is, ever will be. It's like, it's not sort of, it blows me out. It's sort of like I know what they're exposing, but what happens is, after the interactions, there'll be more questions. And it pees me off because I'm like, now I want to know this and how this is connected. But what I work out is it could be a day, it could be a year later or more. I work that out anyway. But it's having that, you know, you're not angry, you just pee it off. You're like, they exposed this, why couldn't they just tell me the whole thing so I'm not sitting here wondering? But I worked out it's screwing with my personal and spiritual development while in this body computer. But it's very much the same thing, is that my interactions will either be in astral form or... you know, physically, especially with meditation, it's sort of anything from astral traveling to downloading to interactions, just whatever's meant to come of it is meant to, and I don't sort of worry about where I go or what I do, like I tell people, because I believe you'll go where you're meant to, or whatever's meant to happen will happen. So, yeah. Now, that's fascinating.
Well, I'm a lot more at peace with it now, because I've learned to trust the process of opening it up to new information inside. I really have learned to trust that I'll know when I need to know.
Yeah.
And so there's not this push or I got to find out more, you know, which I used to have, you know. And one time I went to sleep, before I went to sleep one night, I thought, I want to remember as much as I can because I know that I'm going to be out there. And I woke up and I remembered one phrase, and that was it. And the phrase was, it was like I was sitting in a classroom. And the phrase was, and then you will see a fully representational Earth. And the phrase filled me with hope. And it was like, wow, this is cool. I really like this. You know,
that's cool.
I remember more, but there was so much hope in that phrase. And then you will see a fully representational Earth.
Yeah.
Like everybody will be on board, you know, and everybody, you know, people will be more positive and Earth will be a much more loving place. And people will recognize more of their connection with each other.
Yeah, getting back to the oneness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you have much high strangeness activity in your home and just wherever you sort of go as well? Like, not just with, like, do you see crafts and, you know, the whole kit kaboot that sort of just spread it out, happens when it happens sort of thing?
Well, I have. You know, for a while I was taking a lot of pictures out of the bedroom window. I'd lay down to go to sleep and suddenly I'd get, you know, okay, something's going on. And I get up and look out the window, and I wear contact lenses or glasses. And so I would be looking out the window, and if I saw something that was particularly brilliant out there that looked like it was pulsing, and I didn't have glasses or contacts on, I thought, okay, well, that's somebody, because ordinary stars just look like these little light blurs without my glasses. So if I saw something really brilliant and pulsing, then I would get up, put on my glasses, or go get the camera or binoculars and take pictures or something like that. And finally, I just realized I wasn't getting enough sleep, so I got curtains and shut the window, and it was kind of my way of saying, hey guys, I'm writing this book now, and I've got to get my rest.
Yeah, no, so, no, it's like, it's, yeah, it's sort of everyone stay back when that's happening.
Yeah, so they've been kind of backed off, and hopefully they'll come around some more. But I have to tell you, rather than watching lights in the sky, which is wonderful, I'm a lot more interested in landings and meetings.
The interactions. Well, that's the what I've said to people is that, and I do sort of CE5 stuff, like I say to people, well, I only take star seeds out too, besides my family, to have shown them, because it's to get them to connect on a level. And like I've said to my family or whoever's come out with me, this is to show you a conscious interaction, because I'll use the lasers and the crafts will power up, so it shows interaction, but I'll say, this is nothing. It's about who's behind the crafts and interacting and opening up your spiritual self. Because I said, this is just, lights in the sky are really cool, you know, fantastic to see, but it's what's behind it and the purpose of the interactions. And every time, that's where their own aspect on everything that's going on goes to. They just go, yeah, it's cool with crafts, but the actual interaction aspect. Going back to the MyLab stuff, do you know why you? Have you ever thought about why you? Why did they do this to you? And why? Do you feel like you were led into the military? Like you were saying earlier on, like as if you were meant to have this experience. It was all sort of sorted out and planned out to go in there. But in saying that, why the MyLab stuff? Like, and what, if you don't know, do you have a theory or some ideas on why the military did what they did to you? Or really the military behind the military, I think.
Yeah. Well, when a person is picked up by ETs, if you're an ET experiencer with the Zetas or whatever, the military is very interested in why the ETs are interested in you. Okay, why you, why not somebody else? And so I think that they were very interested in me because I was an experiencer. And I think that they knew that I was. And the other part was when I was writing the book, and I recommend everybody to write down their experiences if they're having
I'll do it straight away, yeah.
Absolutely, because so many more dots are going to connect for you when you start to write it down. And I realized when I was writing my book that shortly before I went in the military, I had a dream about ET craft and how they work. And I came back even with a diagram, a basic diagram of how the technology is laid out. And that dream happened shortly before I went in the military. And then the other part of that, where was I going with this? Too many thoughts.
No, it's all right. Like,
they're very interested in why ETs are interested in us.
Yeah, like I was saying to you before the show, is that the people that are experiences and also had MyLab experiences here in Australia, I can't find much of a military connectional background like those of you in the US. It just seems to, that's a commonality there, but it's not here in Australia. But the commonality is that we're experiences, and it's like, as I said before, they wanted to know what my experiences were. So however they download that information out of my head or get it out of me, who knows? But that's sort of the main reason I think that pertains to why those military sort of experiences happen. So they're trying to find out what the hell's going on and what this part of it is. So with your book, it's Facing the Shadow and Embracing the Light. With that, did you... this is what's happened with my books, is I'll read the copy before I send off the final print, and you connect more dots together as when you've read it as a whole. Did you...
Yeah.
Would you like to just talk, like, sort of skim over that? Because it is enlightening, and it's like, how didn't I pick this up?
I really have to say that I had help from my celestials or interdimensional teachers in writing this book, because it just flowed out pretty much as it was. And, even with it being a page turner, like at the end of some chapters, you just want to get into the next chapter. And even when I was rereading it, it was like, wow, I just want to read the next part, And so that was interesting to just kind of watch it flow out in this beautiful, coherent manner. And I don't think I could have done that without the extra dimensional help. I think they really, really were there for me. And I want to remark here that they don't look to me like the Zetas do. They're more human looking. They're tall, slender, and kind of ethereal looking humans. But they are more human looking than the Zetas.
Yeah, that's been my experience. My last life was in Orion, and that's where I've come from to come down here, and I'm actually split up at this time, even though we're living all lives at the same time. They're saying that my spirit's split up, half still there. I know it gets a lot more, and people are like, what the hell, this is where it goes way out there, but they're a human type. Originally I thought they were just human Orions, but then when I did the hypnosis session, I could see them turn into light, and one of them jumped in the body, and this is where I was telling Mary afterwards. I don't think they're what I thought they were, because...
That's amazing, because I had a dream about being in the military again, and my commanding officer asked me into an office, and I don't think this was a dream, I think this was something else, but I was asked into this office, and he showed me this short film where I guess there were these two things that looked like pillars of light on the film, and they were moving around. And he said, those are ETs. He said, they look like pillars of light on the film, but they actually have more of a body when you look at them for real. So the film just picked up these pillars of light.
Yeah.
Shows me the film. And he says, well, what do you think? He says, what do you think about all this? And I guess in the film, these pillars of light had interacted with a military chaplain, you know, like a minister.
Yep.
And he just completely, he lit up and he was like, wow, this is really cool. And it was all telepathic. And so when the CO shut off the film, he asked me, he says, well, what do you think about all this? He says, don't you think that's kind of a threat? These people could read your mind, you know, and know everything that's in there. And I said, sir, I said, you had to know a little bit about me when you asked me to come in and look at this film, and you should know that I'm not all that much in favor of all this government secrecy. And I don't really think it's a bad thing that these beings can see into us. And he smiled, and he said, well, in that case, he says, I have another job for you. And he says, he picked up this little satchel, and he opened it up, and there was two cylinders in there. And he said, those extraterrestrial consciousnesses are in these cylinders. And in order for them to come out on the base and move around like one of us, we need to get them some uniforms. He said, so if you would take this satchel down to supply and get some uniforms and bring them back to my office, that would be a great thing, you know, if you would do that. And I said, sure. He said, there's also something in the satchel that will keep you from being seen while you're doing this. So I carried the satchel down to supply, I got the uniforms, and I was heading back to the CO's office, and then I woke up from this dream. And it was pretty fascinating to think that they look like these pillars of light on the film. And then you say something about the light.
Yeah, it's like I say to people, like, it just, like, everyone thinks, you know, people like us have got all the answers, and I don't think we've even got, you know, 0.0001 out of 1,000% of what's
right.
Going on. But when we're all together, we've sort of got, you know, the pieces of the puzzle connect. But
right.
That was something trippy for me, is that I know people go, how do you know that what you're interacting with is good? And I can say, because my life has got so much better, as in I'm calm, I'm loving. I was a bit of a, you know, out there and full-on kid. I've just turned 30 now, and, you know, my life is just amazing, and people who know me just can't be around me because they just say it's like somebody else has jumped into the body. But my interactions with these guys is nothing but good. There has been interactions with, like, reptilian or archonic type entities that haven't been, but that's what got me, is that I'm still awakening to my own kind, because that spun me out, as I said to Mary, is that they were human, but they turned into light beings. And I was like, you know, it's like that activated more within me to learn about my own kind, where I last was from. So it's not like, you know, you interact and you know it all. It's things are still being activated and awakening daily. And that's how it would be for you, wouldn't it, with just more things being revealed. It's like we already know it, but the brain computer is helping to sort of open up, and it's like, this time we'll let this come in, and it's the higher consciousness allowing that to happen.
Yeah, and when I had hypnosis with Mary in 2010...
Oh, you got it done with her as well.
Yes,
yeah.
I did. And there was something... I actually visited the Liren ship and visited my people during this session. And the commander of the ship, which isn't a very good word, but I don't have another one to replace it, he's more like an older father or older brother. But you knew he was in charge and watching out for everybody and overseeing all the work we were doing. And he came towards me, and he had the most incredibly loving face. It was just amazing. I mean, you just knew that this being just loved you with his whole being. And he took me traveling in this hypnosis session. It was pretty incredible. He took me astral traveling over Mars, and he showed me the face on Mars and the pyramid and the Cydonia area where all that is. And I realized the reason we don't get pictures of that area anymore is there are human beings there doing an archaeological dig on that site. And that archaeological dig would be evident if they allowed pictures out of that area again.
Yep.
So that was one...
Do you think they're getting there by the stargates, or like things like teleportation? You think that's how they're getting there, not by craft?
I do. I think they do both. I think they travel there by craft, and I think they also travel by teleportation or portals,
yeah.
You know, stargates, things like that. And then the other thing that this commander took me to, he says, now I want you to go to the moon of the past with me. I've got to show you something. I said, I don't want to go near the moon. It was a terrible experience for me. And he says, I just need you to see this one thing. So we went to the moon of the past when I was there and suffering more abuse. And he showed me an exchange that took place between an extraterrestrial that was on the moon and my commanding officer, who was in charge of my time on the moon. And the ET was saying to the commanding officer, you have no idea who you have there. Do you realize that everything that you're doing to her gets reported back to her people? And that was like,
you needed that.
I really needed to hear it, and it still has a powerful impact to talk about it. But I think it was shortly after that that they said, okay, wipe her memory and get her out of this program right away.
So that would have been at that time with the military.
Yeah, I think that's how I got out of it. Otherwise, I might still be being used in those programs.
So, how are things for you today with all this, like, all that's totally left behind, the MyLab military stuff, and you've continued on this spiritual awakening still like you wanted to when you got out, like how it was when you were younger.
Mm-hmm.
So, how's life for you today with that?
Life today is pretty good. I have, you know, some back pain. I ended up sitting on pinched nerves and herniated discs for the almost 5 years of working on this book. So, I got some healing to do for my back. But life is pretty good today, and while I have a feeling that I am being watched and there is surveillance going on my life, it's kind of a look but don't touch kind of surveillance.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they don't want to, I guess they don't want to get my people upset with them or something, I don't know. You know, I don't bank on that. You know, I'm definitely a trust God and tie your camel kind of person. So, I mean, I'm very cautious, but I wouldn't say that I cross the line into paranoia.
Yeah. No, you've got to have that balance. You've got to be aware. I think it's sort of more looking but don't touch these days. Although I had something a couple of days happen after I had... yeah, Brad on about the Australian MyLab stuff, but I was thinking it's sort of them letting me know that they're watching still. There had been a break in a period of time of activity, but yeah, I think it's very similar set out like that with you. So we'll end the show there. I'll put your links up to your book and your website, and you've got a blog spot too, don't you? The Exopolitics one, Durango
yeah.
Or something?
Yeah. It doesn't get used very much right now, but I did have that for a while, and there are some good articles there. But most everything is going to be going to the Encounters with Healing or the Facing the Shadow, Embracing the Light websites now.
Yeah, all right. Well, I'll put the link up to those too, and thank you
sure.
very much for coming on. I'll, you know, if you want to come back on in the future, I'll invite you back on, and we'll talk some more.
Wonderful.
But very fascinating.
Yeah, well, I would love that. I'd love to talk with you some more. I think that we could probably have fascinating conversations for hours on end.
Yeah, no, definitely. There's a lot of commonality, so yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you. If you were here, I would give you a hug.
Yeah, straight back at you. Cheers.
Okay, great.
Right, bye.
Thanks. Okay, bye-bye.